I don't think they cared about him. He is a convicted sexual offender.
Studies show that even if it only happens in 6% of the hanging suicide deaths, it does happen in 6% of them.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, and welcome to Best Case, Worst Case. This is Jim Clementi, former New York City prosecutor, retired FBI profiler, and writer-producer on CBS's Criminal Minds. And with me today is...
Jim, back in the studio. It's Francie Hakes, former state and federal prosecutor. I'm so excited. I think this is two... maybe three in a row in the studio together.
Wow. And guess what, Francie?
What?
We're in the new, improved XG Studios 2.0.
That's right. We have really cool mics and all kinds of sound stuff and equipment I can't name, stuff that just looks very fancy, a lot of cords.
But it's very scarlet.
It is. It's red, so I'm happy about that.
Yeah. So we're really happy, and hopefully our listeners will be pleased with the enhanced audio capabilities.
Yes. And Jim, I just wanted to say thank you to some of our listeners who write faithfully into Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And today you got a big compliment.
I did. Isn't that crazy? For once?
I mean, in our episode that just dropped recently that we did with Derek Levasseur, we were talking about hashtag I prefer Francie. And somehow trending on Twitter, well, in my mind anyway, is hashtag I prefer Jim. I don't know how it happened.
I don't know that it's trending on Twitter, but I will reach out directly to Pithy Princess at BurnRate100. And I have to thank you personally, because I hope I'm not calling you out and this is a problem, but she writes, I wish I could say that hashtag I prefer Francie, but the truth is hashtag I prefer Jim, because he has the sexiest brain I've ever heard, and he's so compassionate that he thinks the death penalty is wrong. I mean, he's everything. But you're close second at Francie Hakes, exclamation point. And that was like the most amazing tweet I have ever read in my entire life. And it's making me blush. And finally, somebody recognizes how sexy my brain is.
Oh my God.
I mean,
Pithy Princess, what are you thinking?
No, stop. Pithy Princess is amazing. She's obviously got perfect clarity. She knows exactly what everything means and all that stuff.
So all I'm going to say about Pithy Princess is she has created a monster as if there already wasn't one across the table from me.
Please stop.
Anyway,
it was really nice to read that. Thank you so much. And thank you, Francie, for sharing it with me. Despite the fact that you started this hashtag, I prefer Francie.
I think it was Derek, but anyway.
Okay. But the fact is that we're here to talk about something that is not fun and happy.
No.
And it is Jeffrey Epstein.
Neither fun nor happy. But however, Jim, the good news, I guess, in one respect, in the no longer breathing the air the rest of us normal, nice people breathe, is that he's dead.
Yeah, well, again, I don't think that's good news, because justice was averted. And I don't think it is ever good if somebody in law enforcement custody is given the opportunity, if not the means, to commit suicide. Why, when this guy was already attempting suicide, did they take him off suicide watch? What the hell's going on, Francie? And this is in New York.
I know.
Where I'm from.
The situation is crazy, Jim, and I agree with you. It is never a good thing when justice is denied. And what I said in a tweet about it when news of his suicide, his purported suicide, made the rounds after he committed this act, maybe, on August the 10th, was hashtag fire and brimstone. And I hope that that is where he is now and that that is what he is feeling and will feel for all eternity. So maybe there's some justice later. But I agree with you, Jim. I don't think it's justice now. So let's kind of break this down. A lot of our listeners have written in, especially after the reports that he was dead came out, and asked us to weigh in. So I thought we would break this down in the true Jim and Francie tradition and talk about it in light of our experience. I want to treat this, Jim, as a little bit of a, what do you call it? Unexplained death investigation?
It's called an equivocal death investigation. And what that does is it looks into matters in which you're not sure whether it's a homicide, suicide, accident, natural, or undetermined. And those are all legitimate categories of manner of death. So there's cause of death, which is like gunshot wound, exsanguination, and so forth. And there's manner of death, which is the way in which someone died. And sometimes it's very difficult. If you find, for example, a skull in the middle of a desert, well, if there's no bullet wounds or knife wounds or smashing fractures on that skull, you just don't know. Did the person wander out and die of starvation or dehydration? And then did the bones get scattered by predator animals? Or did somebody leave the body in the middle of the desert after they strangled them? We just don't know. So sometimes you have to categorize it as undetermined. But in most cases, there's enough evidence to weigh in one way or the other. And let's look at this, because here's a guy who's in custody who, what, less than 2 weeks before tried to commit suicide and was on suicide watch, and then he wasn't anymore?
Well, that's right. I mean, so the reports were that he tried to commit suicide. I never knew whether that was a real suicide attempt or not, because, you know, we're working at a little bit of a disadvantage. If you were still in the FBI and I was still a federal prosecutor, we would know all of these facts.
Right. I know the details are really important here.
They are important. But what we heard publicly anyway was that there were signs of injuries to his neck and it was being reported as a suicide attempt. But whether it was a suicide attempt, Jim, or he was assaulted in prison, either way, he's put on suicide watch, which brings in a whole bunch of controls. And can I just say at the outset, the Federal Department of Corrections, and that's where the MCC in New York is under the jurisdiction of the Federal Department of Corrections. That is inside the Department of Justice.
Right. The MCC is the Metropolitan Correctional Center, all right? And it's this big building with barely any windows at all. And it's right downtown, right in the center where all the courts are. And it's where they keep federal prisoners.
Well, that's right. And the Department of Justice is in charge of everyone in that building.
The U.S. Department of Justice, where you'd think they would, you know, hire some good, what, guards and wardens and people to make sure that when somebody's on suicide watch, that they don't get the opportunity or the means to commit suicide?
Or to be assaulted. I mean, you know, and assault in prison is a very common thing, and it's something that is fought against by everyone working there, hopefully, at every prison across this country, because people have the right, when they are in the custody of the public, which is what they are, to be safe. They are being punished, they're being penalized for their crimes, or they're being held pending a judgment on whether they committed the crime. But regardless of who they are and what they've done, they have a right to be held in a safe manner. I did not like Jeffrey Epstein, and I would have been the first to say that I'd like to see someone take a ball bat to him. But I didn't really mean that. I don't really mean it. Not until after he's convicted.
Were you in New York at the MCC recently?
Well, I was in New York recently, as a matter of fact. Interesting timing. But the truth of the matter is that something went wrong here. So let's break it down. So we have a man who is either assaulted or tries to commit suicide, put on suicide watch.
Right.
Less than 14 days later, he's taken off suicide watch. Now, Jim, you and I know that every prison has some kind of a psychiatrist or a psychologist, and part of their job is to determine whether or not someone is a danger to themselves or others.
Right.
And so what we're hearing is that this psychiatrist, this prison psychiatrist, said that Epstein was no longer a danger to himself and therefore could be taken off suicide watch less than 2 weeks after being put on.
Yeah, you got to wonder whether that's simply a manpower issue or what. I mean, did somebody say, look, we don't have the time to spend, you know, these extra man hours watching him and making sure that nothing happens to him, the hell with him. If that's the case, it's a real breakdown in justice. And nobody, whether it's Epstein, who the entire country, maybe the world, was really interested in finding out what the hell happened, and there was literally hundreds of potential victims out there who were robbed of justice because he was able to kill himself. There may also be, I don't know, a few dozen, a few hundred potential co-conspirators, people who may have engaged in sexual activity with girls that Jeffrey Epstein or his sidekick procured for him. So will all that be investigated still now that Epstein's dead? I don't know.
Well, that's a great question. And I want to talk about that, but I want to get back first to the prison. So I think you're right. I think your hypothesis is exactly right. Knowing what you and I know about federal bureaucracy, I really have very little doubt that while there may have been a policy in place to check on prisoners in his section or him particularly every 30 minutes to make sure they're okay, to actually look into the cell, I don't think they cared about him. He is a convicted sexual offender,
right,
who has lots of money and probably an arrogant attitude, and who got away with it last time pretty much with a slap on the wrist.
Yeah.
And may have had every expectation that he was going to get away with it again. And I think part of that is the fault of federal prosecutors who brought this new indictment on exactly the same fact pattern as the old one. So you've given him some reason to think he may escape, and it may be a legal escape because they may have been barred from prosecuting him again because of that non-prosecution agreement we talked about on a previous episode. The defense team, however, hadn't even bothered to file a motion to dismiss based on that non-prosecution agreement. So if he was in jail longer than he should have been in the minds of his defense team, they're partly to blame because they weren't even filing the paperwork that they should have filed to get the hearings they say he would have been entitled
to. But Francie, I'm just thinking that refiling was simply a stopgap. I mean, weren't they going to file additional charges? Weren't they going to do more interviews? Weren't they going to take advantage of the current stay on the statute of limitations in New York State, and actually bring forth additional actions within the statute of limitations?
Well, that's only for civil cases.
Oh, that's only civil?
It's only for civil cases. So it doesn't impact the criminal statute of limitations at all. But what Epstein's death showed us, Jim, I think, is that that's not what was happening. Because to me, remarkably, shockingly, appallingly, the FBI went to his compound in the Virgin Islands on the day that he committed suicide. On the day of his death, not 3 days before.
After he committed suicide?
Yes. After he was dead, they parachute in and start searching his Virgin Islands compound.
So I just wonder, I mean, that's a U.S. territory.
Yes.
I just wonder whether they had, I mean, why do they have to wait till after he's
dead? Well, I don't have any idea. If they had probable cause to search his Manhattan residence, which they did when he landed from France, I imagine they had the same probable cause to search his Virgin Islands residence.
Well,
and they didn't.
Yeah, unless they have nobody who came forward and no information that things happened at that Virgin Islands residence.
Yeah, but that was the whole case the last time around.
It was about Virgin Islands.
It was about the Virgin Islands, Florida, and Manhattan. That was it. Those three locations. Nothing changed. So it doesn't make any sense that they weren't able to get a search warrant then, but they could suddenly after he died. That makes no sense whatsoever and makes me wonder whether they even had a search warrant for Virgin Islands because he's dead. So he's not there to object to it.
Right. Well, there's probably no standing to object if he's the sole owner. That may be it. Maybe they didn't have probable cause. Maybe they just went in without a search warrant. I know I saw in the coverage that there was an NYPD person walking in. Did they just all go down there and say, hey, let's check it out now.
Because there's no one to object to it later. Whatever right. they find would have been inadmissible against him in a criminal proceeding, but is fully admissible against anyone else in a criminal proceeding.
Right. And I don't see them prosecuting the body of Jeffrey Epstein.
Well, probably not. You know, we all know life can be stressful. Between work and family and everything in between, it's not always easy to find time for yourself. And this podcast, Best Case, Worst Case, for example, sometimes brings up some difficult issues. We talk about hard topics, and sometimes our listeners tell us they need someone to talk to about it. Talkspace Online Therapy makes taking care of your mental health more affordable and convenient than ever before. Simply provide your preferences for therapy, and Talkspace will match you with one of 5,000 plus therapists the very same day. You can send your therapist unlimited texts or audio, photographs, or video messages from anywhere at any time. And y'all, it's affordable. 1 month of therapy on the Talkspace platform costs about the same amount as a single face-to-face session. Best of all, you'll never have to wait a week to share what's on your mind. You'll never have to wait to talk about the things you need to talk about. Talkspace has more than 5,000 licensed therapists who are experienced in addressing the challenges we all face. To match with your perfect therapist for a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, go to Talkspace.com. Make sure to use the code BESTCASE to get $65 off your first month and show your support for the show. That's BESTCASE at Talkspace.com.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
And that brings me to the current news. We can still talk about this equivocal death matter. The medical examiner has just ruled that it was a suicide by hanging. Now, Jim, you and I actually talked about this over the weekend when we found out he died. And you know, I'm not a tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorist, generally speaking.
Well, not generally, but generally. Right now, I see your tinfoil hat.
I'm going there. But even I think it is highly suspicious, or thought it was highly suspicious, to hear there were multiple bones in his neck broken, including the hyoid bone, which experts agree is almost always only ever seen homicide by strangulation.
But the studies show that even if it only happens in 6% of the hanging suicide deaths, it does happen in 6% of them.
It does.
And that means that it's certainly possible to happen. And when you have somebody his age, I think if you studied all the people who were 76 years old who committed suicide by hanging, you might find a higher rate of that, because the hyoid bone, which is three little bones that are kept together with cartilage when you're younger, but as you age, that solidifies, calcifies, and becomes all hardened bone, and it's a lot easier to break.
It's more brittle.
Yeah, so I don't know that it's a real freak accident or a real outlying thing for a 76-year-old man who was hung by a bed sheet off the top bunk. I believe that's what we have heard, whether that would be an anomaly or not. But I think it is very possible. And especially if he committed an attempt less than 2 weeks earlier, he probably learned from his mistakes. His unsuccessful attempt before, he may have fixed it. Now, my biggest question is, why did he commit suicide?
Well, I think it's a great question. But Jim, I think you're absolutely right. And we've certainly seen in tragic cases of teen suicide, for example, an unsuccessful attempt often leads to a successful attempt. And so everyone who knows anything about suicide should have been on the lookout for a successful attempt to happen the second time, which obviously it did here. But what I think, to me, the tinfoil hat comes in, not that he was murdered, Jim, so much as someone put their hands on him and put the bed sheets around his neck and posed him as if he had, you know, leapt off of the 5.5 foot high top bunk, but rather that it was allowed to happen. that you have guards who never checked on him for 3 hours, and you had his roommate moved out the day before, where commonly you keep roommates in with these suicidal people because it's harder for them to commit suicide successfully if there's someone in the room with them or in the cell with them. And that person was taken out literally the day before Epstein's death. And then you have, you know, cameras. What do they show? We're seeing reports, and again, this is just allegations, but we're seeing reports that the guards falsified their logs, claiming falsely that they were checking on him every 30 minutes.
And, you know, I'll just say that, you know, being a guard in any prison situation is a tough job, so much so that it only attracts people who will put up with that. And sometimes they get jaded. Sometimes they might say things, and sometimes they might feel, good riddance. Let's get rid of this guy. Who needs him? But what they're doing is very short-sighted, and it is totally contradictory to the justice system. And if they just were lazy, or they deliberately stayed away and they took out his roommate and they set it up so that he could, in fact, kill himself if he wanted to, that's a crime in my book. That's a crime.
I think it is a crime. The attorney general has come forward and said that they are going to do a thorough investigation, and that he was outraged and appalled that this death was allowed to happen on DOJ's watch. And I take Attorney General Barr at his word. I think that we will see some penalty. I think we'll see some prosecutions here out of it, which brings me to the point you originally made, Jim, and that is his death is not a victory for anyone. I know that there were lots of people online exulting about his being dead, and I certainly understand that. I get that impulse, saying, oh, good, he's dead. He can no longer hurt anyone else or breathe the air we breathe. But in a case like this, where justice was not done the first time, I wanted him alive. And in fact, I'm so sadistic that I wanted him to be paraded in a courtroom. I wanted to see him in the defendant's dock. I wanted to see him humiliated, convicted, you know, tried, sentenced, handcuffed, and perp walked. That's what I wanted to see.
Okay, you want to know what I wanted to see? What? I wanted to see Jeffrey Epstein put in a position where he was forced to tell who else was doing the same thing he was doing. I wanted to mine him for information. I want to find out the entire extent of his network. I want to find out what the hell he was doing, how he was able to, for years, get away with sexually victimizing girls and women. And also, I want to know how the hell he got that sweetheart deal. How the hell did he negotiate not only the deal for himself, but for his co-conspirators? I have never in my law enforcement career, and that started in 1983 to 2019, I have never before heard of a deal that covered co-conspirators like that. It's simply the opposite of the kind of deals that we make. We let one person plead guilty in the hopes that they'll get a lesser sentence, if and only if they give us the information about the other people. Not when they protect the other people. How is that promoting justice? How is that not just perpetuating a situation where those people walk free and get to do it again and again and again? What the f*** was going on in Florida in the U.S. Attorney's Office? That's what I want to know. And I hope the hell this investigation is not over.
Well, we haven't figured that out yet. I hope that the Department of Justice is still going to look into it. I think they will. They should. The answers don't die with him. I mean, the reason that he was given such a ridiculous, unjust deal don't die with him. So I hope that they will continue to look into it, which brings me to the victims. I trust that the medical examiner of New York City is telling us the truth and has done a thorough investigation, and that his or her determination of suicide by hanging is factual. That is, that Epstein, on his own, killed himself in his cell. Now, we are probably going to learn at some point whether there were people who aided and abetted that in the sense of a hands-off approach, which may or may not be a crime. But what is going to go forward that's more important to me than that, although that's important, is determining what the hell happened in the Florida case. But more importantly, where is the justice for the victims? Where is the justice for those who were exploited by Epstein and his co-conspirators. And we know he wasn't the only one. We know there were co-conspirators because, of course, in the original agreement to not prosecute him, he immunized known and unknown co-conspirators. Exactly. So we know they existed.
Right. We know they existed. Otherwise, why the hell would they put that line in the deal? Obviously, there were people that he protected. Why did he protect them? Because probably they were the ones that got him the deal in the first place.
Well, and while I think it's a little Johnny-come-lately for the FBI to show up at his Virgin Islands compound, let's give them the benefit of the doubt and say that there are reasons I don't know, because I don't know all the facts, that they couldn't go down there earlier. Probable cause or legal issues, wrangling with the U.S. Attorney's Office there, who knows? No judge would sign a warrant for there. They have federal district judges in the Virgin Islands. We don't know all the reasons that they were late to the party. But let's say there are good reasons they're late to the party. This should give at least a small amount of comfort both to our listeners and to victims in this case, Jim. Because with Epstein's death did not die the case. Otherwise, there'd be no reason for them to show up at that compound.
Yeah, that's true. And I want to ask you something legally. Can we force Epstein's lawyers to turn over the evidence of the original deal? Or does the attorney-client privilege survive his death?
It doesn't survive death.
So that information could be subpoenaed from his law firms?
Getting anything out of lawyers is always a challenge and faces a lot of Supreme Court protections. Law firms, because of the precedent that would set, and because they might say that even though privilege doesn't survive death, as far as statements that were made, when you're talking about documentary evidence and things gathered by lawyers and their investigators, people wouldn't talk to them, might not tell them the truth if they thought later those things might be able to be revealed just when the client dies.
Yeah, but
I think it's very complicated.
Yeah, it's complicated, but if the law allows us to subpoena that stuff, we should be subpoenaing that stuff. We should find out from both sides, both the U.S. Attorney's Office and the defense side, now that he's dead. We should find out who the hell made the overtures. Who made the deal? How are these deal points made? What was the discussion that convinced the U.S. Attorney's Office to say, yeah, we'll do that? Because to me, that's just outrageous. There is no way that that is legitimately justified. Unless you're going to say it was done for national security reasons, or, you know, the fate of the entire world rested on this deal. I can't imagine a reason why that was justified.
Well, you can't justify it, because even if you wanted to say that Epstein was some kind of asset, which there's been some allegation that he was a CIA asset, although that's been denied by federal prosecutors working on various national security cases at the time who said they'd never even heard his name. So I just don't think that that's really very likely. I think it's probably not at all likely. I think it's just bogus. And I think it's something that his attorneys have put out to protect him and them. Because let's face it, a couple of his high-profile attorneys, Alan Dershowitz and Ken Starr, have been run through the ringer since this case came to light with the Miami Herald's report last fall. And in fact, Judge Ken Starr, who you know personally, Jim, came out just this week and said that he did not think Epstein got a, quote, sweetheart deal in the prior deal back in the Southern District of Florida, which is just asinine.
How can he say that?
Well, of course he got a sweetheart deal. He got a slap on the wrist, no federal prosecution whatsoever, and work release that allowed him to go home.
Yeah, it sounds to me like Ken Starr is basically saying, look, the victims had their own problems, but that is absolutely no excuse for giving this defendant, I mean, put him on trial. Let the world know what happened. If you lose the case, fine. At least you tried. But to backpedal and give him that kind of a deal where he basically was sleeping in the jail like a hotel at night and going back to his house and doing whatever the hell he wanted during the day, that's outrageous. And just the fact that he is allowed to continue working when the average U.S. citizen is prevented from working when they go to jail. Not allowed to go home and go to work.
No, I mean, it was money. He bought this result.
Do you know any other case? In your career, have you ever had one of your defendants have the ability to work during the day while they're serving their sentence?
No, never.
Me either. And
it's insanity.
Between us, you know, it's decades and decades of work, and neither of us have ever heard of another case. Ken Starr, I'm asking you, really, come on, explain to us. Let us know how you see that as a non-sweetheart deal. If you convicted one of the Clintons in the Whitewater investigation And they got that deal. You wouldn't call that a sweetheart deal? Come on, Ken.
I think he would. And I think the important thing for the victims to know in this case is that it is still being investigated. You had recently a lot of documents that came out from depositions in the earlier matter. So when the criminal case, it was discovered by the victims and their lawyers that the criminal case had gone completely off the rails, understandably, they started filing civil suits. And it's because of these civil suits, by the way, that we have most of the information that we have now, the depositions and the evidence that's been gathered by the civil attorneys trying to get some measure of justice for the victims. It has come out that there are allegations that one of Epstein's co-conspirators is a woman named Ghislaine Maxwell. Ghislaine is apparently a longtime friend of Epstein's and kind of a mysterious figure. And the speculation has been that she's one of the co-conspirators that was immunized by this non-prosecution agreement. But there were allegations that she was Epstein's chief procurer. That's been made in these court documents and in these depositions that have now been made public. Mm. She's been labeled Epstein's chief procurer of women. And there are lots of young women and girls who came forward and said that she found them in spas, massage parlors, and laundromats and other places, and promised them lots of money and attracted them in what you and I recognize, Jim, as a classic grooming human trafficking kind of scheme, the grooming pipeline, we might call it, to partake in these different parties that Epstein was giving and getting on his plane and going to the islands, going to Manhattan,
and
going to Europe.
These were legally children at the time.
Some of them were children. Some of them were not, but some of them were definitely children at the time. I think the youngest I've heard is 13 or 14.
Oh, geez.
And so you've got this allegation against her that not only was she his chief procurer, but that she also participated in some illegal sexual activity with some of these underage girls with Epstein. Mm. These are just allegations at this point, but that's the important thing for the victims to know here. This investigation did not die with Epstein. It will go on because there has been a massive travesty of justice here, Jim, where you have a case of many, many people, many of them wealthy and powerful, not just Epstein, taking advantage of young, vulnerable women and children to sexually exploit them and then get away with it because of their power and their position.
Well,
and we can't have that.
Right. And I think you're going to find, Francie, and all of our listeners, that this is something that we really, as a country, can't let go. We can't let this go away. We can't let this die. We have to pursue it because, really, the indications are that somebody in power was able to manipulate the system in a way that prevented Epstein from being brought to justice, that kept down these victims and survivors from coming forward, and created a situation in which he was able to continue to do what he wanted to do for years on end.
Yeah. And then really, he's never had to pay a price. And now he never will, at least on this earth. So we have to hope that his co-conspirators will very soon be facing real justice. I like the my favorite hashtag on Twitter when I see things like the Marshals have captured a fugitive is justice is coming, or they're looking for a fugitive. Justice is coming. And so I say hashtag justice is coming for those co-conspirators. The Attorney General of the United States told them not to rest easy. And I, whatever you think about politics, Bill Barr is not someone I would cross if he has me in his sights. I'd be worried. And so they should be worried.
Well, I'm glad. And I hope they are worried. And I hope that they are uncovered and they are brought to justice. Because just as a regular citizen, as a survivor myself, as a law enforcement career officer, I just have to say, this case makes me sick. And the only way I'm going to feel any better about it is if they continue it and they actually uncover it and get this pus out in the open and clear up everything. Because right now, there are thousands of questions and there are people who clearly helped him and they weren't brought to justice.
Justice is coming, Jim. We'll keep on this.
All right. Hashtag justice is coming. That one I'll agree with. Until next time, thank you for listening to Best Case, Worst Case.
Best Case, Worst Case is an XG production. Produced by Jim Clementi at Empire Studios, LA. engineered and edited by Mike Thal. Music composed and performed by Simba Sumba and hosted by Wonder.
You can listen to Best Case, Worst Case on your favorite listening app. We are on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you want to do something about child sexual abuse, Darkness Delight can help. Did you know that more than 90% of the time children are sexually abused by someone they know?
Jim, this isn't about stranger danger. It's about learning the true risks. Darkness to Light's training can help prevent, recognize, and react to child sexual abuse in your community.
When you make the decision to get involved, kids can be protected. It starts with you.
Visit www.d2l.org to take the training and learn more.
That's D2L.org.